Good afternoon, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop on Washington, bringing you all the news from the nation's capital that the government does not want you to know. It is now 6 days past Election Day, and the divide between red states and blue states is greater than ever. I have never seen so many Americans mad at their fellow Americans as I've seen in the last week. It seems we are divided even more now than we were during the election. And the short speech by Bush and Kerry asking us to work together, it's already thrown out the window. Indeed, George Bush himself threw it out the window when he said that he's going to use his political capital, and those that agree with him, he would welcome their support. Those that don't agree or want compromise, I guess, it's thrown out the window. So I want to explore this hour all the things that everyone in America is talking about, and that is the great red state, blue state divide. And I'm fully aware that red state and blue state, it's a peace of mind, right? It's a frame of mind. It doesn't really matter. I mean, I happen to live in a red state. I live in Virginia, though I live in the blue state portion of Virginia, which is the Washington, D.C. suburbs. I know many of you live in cities like Atlanta, Georgia, or Nashville, Tennessee, or Austin, Texas, which are blue islands in red states, and all of you are part of the blue state clan, and certainly there are people in middle Pennsylvania and eastern California and so forth that are red parts of blue states. But the question really isn't about the state. It's about the mentality and the division in America that's becoming ever so clear. And both sides are stereotyping the other. The blue side is stereotyped by the red side as the arrogant, liberal, elitist, the intelligentsia, people who think they're smarter than everybody else, people who don't care about the heartland, don't care about ordinary Americans. And then there's the red staters who are stereotyped by the blue staters. They hate gay people. They don't care at all about women. They say, oh, the fetus, an embryo, that's more important than a woman. Let the woman die, but let the fetus live. There are people that like toting around their guns and people who really never had to worry much about terrorism because, after all, it's the blue states that were attacked. But because of their fears that somehow the terrorists were going to come to Kansas or South Dakota, they have to go ahead and support stopping constitutional rights of people, rounding up people in the blue states, in New York, in California. And it goes on back and forth. And I wonder whether we're really listening to each other at all. It's very interesting to me that I turned on my computer today and I got a whole host of blog entries on my weblog from right-wingers. And I got to say, welcome to the Inside Scoop. If you voted for George W. Bush, welcome. I really hope you'll come in. I hope you'll call in. I hope we will have a dialogue. The toll-free number, by the way, if you're new to the Inside Scoop, is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. I encourage everyone of any political stripe to call in. I should say, however, that looking at the blog entries, I don't see much attempt at understanding each other. No, I'm not talking about my regular conservative listeners. You know who you are. Ben and Nathan and Ed and Jeremy, all of you, hey, you disagree with me, but at least we try to understand each other. No, I'm talking about the comments that I received on the blog from people who've never contributed before that really seem, how do I say it, harsh. Liberal addled minds. It's about insults, not about mutual understanding. And what's interesting to me is, are we ever going to come together? You know, this nation, back in the 80s, two-thirds of us, well, not quite two-thirds, about 60% supported Reagan. A number of us didn't. I didn't support Reagan. But we understood that at least he was reaching out to Democrats. There were many bipartisan things. For example, in 1986, there was a wonderful tax plan that closed a lot of loopholes to businesses, agreed to by Democrats and Republicans. And then, of course, in the 90s, two-thirds of America supported Bill Clinton. You wouldn't know that because the one-third that didn't like Clinton was very angry, very upset, and, of course, they found everything to be horrible. There was Filegate and Travelgate and Whitewatergate and all these things where, oh, my God, Hillary Clinton changed the travel office person. Scandal! Scandal. They made up scandals where they didn't exist, and at the end of the day, they impeached a president over a sex act. But that's just one-third of America. Two-thirds of America, we should always remember, were supporting Bill Clinton. So we have to remember there were times when we have come together as a nation. Obviously, George W. Bush is not very good at being a uniter. He is the most divisive president, probably, I would argue, since the Civil War. I have, certainly in my lifetime, I don't know any time when Americans have been in each other's throats. I take that back. There were the 1960s. All right, let's say he's the most divisive since the 1960s. In fact, in many ways, the battles that we're fighting today are really the same battles we fought in the 1960s. You have people who support civil rights, who are in the minority. And in the 1960s, obviously, the majority of white folk down in the South didn't want blacks to have equal rights, didn't want them to have a right to vote, didn't want them to have the right to go to theaters and restaurants and be treated like human beings, like white people were. And that was the overwhelming majority. And so they voted again and again and again to have these Jim Crow laws, to treat black people like the second-class citizens that most white Southerners of that day thought they were. And then you had liberals coming in, sometimes from out of town, sometimes even from those New England states coming down south where they didn't know their business, at least as the white Southerners thought, and came in to actually register blacks, to actually say that they are human beings they should have equal rights to. Well, obviously, you know where I'm going. We have the same conflict today, and that is over gay rights. You have the right-wingers say, no, gay people cannot be treated equally in America. They are disgusting. I don't like what they do, and therefore I'm going to control their lives. I'm going to insist that they follow my Bible. I don't care whether they agree with my Bible or not. This is a Christian nation. If you don't like it, get out. And then you have the liberals saying, well, hey, you know, America wasn't founded to be a Christian nation. Christianity is not mentioned in the Constitution. Indeed, the First Amendment says there shall be no establishment of religion. And, of course, no one's talking about changing church marriage. What we're talking about is giving equal civil rights to all. But I have to say, from these comments I've been reading, and I'm going to read a lot of comments from the blog this hour, and also hopefully take some of your calls from people who agree or disagree at 877-57-SCOOP, toll-free 877-57-SCOOP. Hopefully you'll call in and let me know what you think about this red state, blue state divide, because what's interesting to me is I put up lots of interesting articles, I thought, on my blog regarding what happened in this election. And absolute, by far, the one that got the most comments was the letter to the red states by a woman in New York City. And this is the one that got some really angry responses. So let's take a look at that letter, and it's on the website at www.radioinsidescoop.com. And if you're listening on the air and not at a computer, then I'll have to tell you what she said. Basically, the woman in New York City points out that she's the one, or people in the blue states, if you will, are the ones that have really faced terrorism. They're the ones that have been in the most danger from terrorist attacks. And yet she finds it amazing that the red staters are the ones who are trying to save America when they don't face the same threats that she did. She points out she has friends who still have nightmares about watching people jump and fall from the towers. How many people like him do you know? People that can't sit in a restaurant without plotting an escape route. How often are you stopped, red staters, by soldiers with bomb-sniffing dogs outside your office? And red staters, how many 9/11 widows and orphans do you know? How often do you fill in for their dead loved ones? She also points out that the blue staters pay more taxes than the red staters. It's incredibly ironic that red state voters, the people from the conservative part of the country, that they're the ones complaining about taxes, and they pay far less taxes than the people in the blue states. Indeed, if you just look at the figures, you see that the blue states, in effect, subsidize the red states. They pay money, and it goes in, and it goes to the people in the red states. And I've heard people in the blue states say, you know what, we just should secede. That's hard to say. We just should secede. I mean, I've heard serious talk about secession. I mean, sometimes it's said with a smile, and sometimes it's not. Have any of you seen this map go around in cyberspace? I found it very interesting, quite amusing, and a little disturbing. And it's a map that shows the United States of Canada. Because if you notice, all the blue states, they connect to Canada. You can connect the West Coast, you can connect the Upper Midwest, you can connect New England. It all fits in one contiguous country. We get Hawaii too, so it's not too cold. And it's all the United States of Canada. The remaining parts, well, the WAG who created that website called it Jesus Land, because this was the heartland. This was the part where everyone agreed in values that they claim were Jesus values. I would argue, in fact, that true religion, whether Christianity, Judaism, Muslim, cares for the poor, looks out for the underdog, and doesn't want a capital gains tax cut. But the point is that people who believe that their religion needed to be stuffed down other people's throats, some of us don't want to be part of that country. And yet, we hear from the red state people, and again, if you think I'm getting this wrong, call in, express your views, 877-57-SCOOP. You tell me where I've got it wrong. But I hear red state people, and they're saying, we're being oppressed. They're saying, look, you know, we're trying to be Christian here, and you're trying to take away our Bibles. Indeed, there was an ad in the Republican National Committee, an actual ad funded by the Republicans in Arkansas and West Virginia that showed a picture of a Bible and said, if you vote for John Kerry, your Bible would be banned. And the interesting thing about that article is that for all the complaints of red state voters that, hey, you know, you liberal elitists, you think we're stupid, I want to know who's stupid enough to believe in that ad. We Democrats were not so crass as to think you would believe in such a stupid ad, but I'll tell you one thing, the Republican National Committee, the National Party, obviously thinks that the red state voters are ignoramuses, that they are ignorant, that they know nothing. To put forth an ad to suggest that anyone would take away anyone's Bible tells me that the people who think that red state voters are ignorant rubes aren't the Democrats, it's the Republicans. I mean, we may worry about ignorance too, but we don't put ads on the air that cater to people's ignorance. So what is going on here? How are we ever going to understand each other? Are we really going to remain a divided nation? What is causing all that divisiveness? I know there's a lot of questions, a lot of things to discuss, and I really want you to join in here. Tell me where I'm wrong. Tell me where I'm right. What can we do to heal? Maybe some of you don't want to heal. The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine.
Hey, Mark, it's Dave from California.
Hey, Dave, how are you?
Pretty fair. I've coined a term. It's called post-traumatic election disorder.
I think a lot of us have PTED.
Yeah. In any event, I would think it would be, if it was possible, the best of all solutions, you know, because I think we are so terribly divided, so terribly one side, terribly misinformed, that it would be a wonderful thing, I think, if everybody that said, let's have Bush, got to have Bush, and everybody that said, let's have Kerry and Edwards, got to have that. But that's not going to happen. How would you divide up the military and others?
So you seriously put thought about this, huh, Dave?
Well, it would be an ideal thing, because I can envision right now that things are going to go very badly. That's my way. And I do believe that there are going to be a lot of the red folks there, just reading your blogs, that as their wages go down, as they lose their benefits, as they lose their Social Security, as they lose most of their freedoms, they will be saying, I love my wonderful president, and this is all Clinton's fault. That's the way their mindset is. So
yeah, it's kind of hard to keep blaming Clinton now, though, as we go into 2005 and 6 and 7 and 8. But we'll see. Maybe people will still do it.
Maybe it's going to be Kerry or somebody else. But I don't see this as a group that says, we've really blown it. I don't think there's a hint of that.
No, there really isn't. What I find most interesting is that most of the comments on the blog are sheer insults. There's no attempt at understanding. And again, if you comment on the blog and you support Bush, call in. You know, I mean, I'd like to hear them take me on air. What I find usually happens is people, they go to this blog, at least all the, and they come in, they make their comment, much like a terrorist might drop a bomb, and then run. They don't want dialogue. I mean, I just haven't seen much of that. Now, again, I'm not talking about the regular conservative listeners. You know who you are. I think those of you who stuck around really do want dialogue. But these new people that are all adding, again, they're not calling in. If you want to, 877-57-SCOOP. But it just seems to me they just want to say, you're a baby killer, you know, talking about being against a woman's right to choose an abortion, and then run. Because it's... I have to say, I think it actually is a simplistic way of looking at things. And I would encourage anyone who does, who's willing to have honest debate to bring it on so we can understand each other.
You know, I'm thinking that a goodly number of thinking conservatives no longer see this as their party. This is something else. This is more of a corporatist kind of a benefit the very, very rich. And unless you're one of them, you had your mind programmed a bit. You know.
Well, what's interesting really is the Republican coalition. There are the extremely wealthy CEOs who benefit most from Bush being in power. And then you have poor to middle class, you know, people struggling to make a living, generally white, generally rural people who are voting for the Republican Party even though it's against their economic interests, even though they would be much better off under a Democratic president. And they're doing it because their church tells them to do it. They're doing it because they believe that Democrats and gay people are evil or wrong or and of course, one of the things that most interests me is when you look at what the two of us want. The blue staters just want to be left alone. They want to say, you know what, I don't know about abortion. Let's let the woman decide. You know, it's not my view. It doesn't matter to me if two people want to love each other. It's none of my business. The blue staters just want to be left alone. The red staters want to actually control the lives of the blue staters. They want to say to a woman they've never met, you must have that child. You who did a fertility clinic and has 30 or 50 or 100 embryos lying around, you must have 100 children. You must have all 100 children, even though the woman had 100 embryos. You know,
you find out earlier, you gays, you don't have our rights, you know, shouldn't have our rights.
Yeah, exactly. Gay people, if gay people can get married, then my sense of marriage, my sense of dignity, my sense of love to my wife or my wife to her husband is so fragile that apparently straight people are going to massively get divorced if gay people can get married. It doesn't make logical sense, but it's not about logic. It's all about emotion. And one of the things I want to try to understand is how Democrats can tap into that emotion. And what I would do, my suggestion for the Democratic Party, is not to change our values, not to change our core values, things like civil rights that we believe in, things like the right to be left alone, things like helping out the disadvantaged, but instead talk about how our values are consistent with religious values. Again, not to take away from the right of atheists to live as they live, but indeed, if you look at any religious teaching, whether it's the New Testament, whether it's the prophets, whether it's in the Quran, Buddhism, they all talk about caring for other people, caring for those less fortunate, not giving all the money to rich people. They talk about, you know, I mean, again, I always point out, Jesus hung out with lepers and prostitutes. Jesus said it's easier for the camel to go through an eye of a needle than a rich man to enter heaven. The prophets always talked about looking out for the widow and the orphan, but you don't hear those religious principles. When the people who say, hey, we're voting for values, those value voters, I've heard them, I've listened to the right-wing talk radios, their values are persecute gay people. Their values are a woman's body belongs to the state.
You know where I put an awful lot of the blame is on these right-wing talk show hosts that I see really as con artists, used car salesmen. They know they've got a bad product, but they are so twisting the minds of those people that gullibly sit there and listen, believing they're being fed the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And I know that they've got to know they're lying. They get the same facts and evidence you do. They must have to know they're cutting pieces out of it and then, you know, twisting one little point around to slam it on people.
I think so too, Dave, and I think that's why they are so averse to actually debating with liberals. Whenever I would call in and to right-wing talk shows, they hang up on me. They don't give me a chance to speak, whereas I'm asking for conservatives to call in. In fact, I should say that one of the counterexamples, I think, and I will watch Crossfire on occasion, is I think Tucker Carlson, who is a conservative who I don't agree with, he's not like a Rush Limbaugh. He will concede oftentimes when the Democrats are right. I certainly don't agree with much of what he stands for, but at least he's open to discussion. He's open to debate. And it seems to me that you can't say we're right and then slam the door and close debate. If you do that, then it precisely leads to the kind of divisiveness that this president has wrought.
Yeah, your buddy Todd there thinks he's just putting on a show for the public. It's an entertainment thing, but he's deceiving an awful lot of people, and he knows it, but...
I'll tell you a real secret about talk radio, and that is that all of them, I won't say all of them, 90-plus percent of them are doing it for show value. Rush Limbaugh, I'm sure he's a conservative, but he talks it up big time just to get ratings. Michael Savage, the same. Ann Coulter, the same. They use these horrific terms that make everybody angry because they know that that's what people are going to watch. And I'll tell you another secret. Alan Combs, and he said this publicly at a talk radio convention I attended, he made it clear that his first goal is entertainment. And if entertainment means, he didn't say this, but it was implied, if entertainment means that he's just got to let Sean Hannity talk right over him and decide everything, well, that's what he's going to do. He's going to work for his bosses at Fox News, and that's more important to him than espousing any particular view. Dave, I want to thank you for your call. I appreciate
it. Thank you so much, Mark. And you know, I am convinced that this election has been rigged.
I've already scheduled an interview with the Ohio Secretary of State's office. I'm going to be looking into it later on this week. I will definitely
thank
have an entire
so
show developed to that devoted to that question. Thanks
Please
for calling
do.
In, Dave. I appreciate
Bye-bye.
It. We're going to take a commercial break. If you want to call in, if you agree with me, if you disagree with me, call in. Dialogue. Don't just throw something on the blog and then run away. The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. We'll be right back with more of The Scoop right after this.
Multiple choice quiz. Dick Cheney is 1, loopy, 2, churlish, 3, thuggish, 4, dangerous, or 5, all of the above. Choose the combo. We saw all of these uglies come out in Cheney the day after the election. John Kerry had barely finished his concession speech when Dick seized the national microphone to growl that the Bushites had not only taken the victory, but also won a mandate. So get ready, world, here they come. A mandate? They barely got 51% of the vote, meaning 49% of the people voted to toss them out on their duffs. A 2% margin is to mandate what near beer is to beer. Also, both pre-election polls and exit polls showed clearly a big chunk of people voting for George W. were actually strongly opposed to his agenda. So why did they choose him? Some were simply voting against Kerry. Some said they were voting against gays, and some were vaguely voting for Bush's, quote, moral values. But a majority of voters said they definitely opposed such specifics as Bush's tax cuts for the rich, his handling of the economy, and his war of lies in Iraq. Despite the public's real desires on national policies, however, the Bush gang is gearing up to ram through an extremist agenda supported only by their ideological cohorts and corporate benefactors. Among his priorities, granting trillions of dollars in permanent tax giveaways to the rich, replacing the progressive income tax with a totally regressive national sales tax, launching the privatization of Social Security, expanding the USA Patriot Act, and extending Bush's Iraqi war into Iran. This is Jim Hightower saying, the Bushites have no mandate for this mugging. To get information and help fight their power grab, call Campaign for America's Future, 202-955-5665.
I know everything. Languages? Yes. Boiling points? Celsius and Fahrenheit? Yes. World capitals? Please. So, not too long ago, I tried to get a refi, and it got turned down. And this is the best part. The loan officer says to me, sir, do you know what your credit score is? So, I looked at her and said, tell me, do you know what the population of Liechtenstein is? Huh? Do you? She didn't.
Get in the know. Check out ScorePower from Equifax. You'll get your credit report, credit score, and you'll learn how your credit decisions can affect your score, all for only $14.95. And knowing that is how you get the credit you deserve. So check out ScorePower at Equifax.com or call 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Well, now I have my credit score up to 760, the same number of days it took Frenchman Michel Lapointe to circle the globe on a bike. Yeah, I'll bet you didn't know that.
Get the power. Score power at Equifax.com.
We are what we are, and it's never
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We're talking about the red state, blue state divide in America. Perhaps never before have we been so divided as we are now. And I want to talk with you about what causes that, what leads to that. What is it with all these comments that are really quite hateful? And I've been accused of being the same. Let me be clear. I got an email just now from Nathan. And he writes, Mark, I really disagree with what you paint as intentions of the common Christian. It is not the intent to hate gay people or control the body of a woman. Let me just say, Nathan, I am not talking about the common Christian. Let me be very clear about that. There are many, many Christians, people of faith, people of all faiths, Jews, Muslims, Buddhists, and definitely Christians, who support gay rights, who are pro-choice on abortion. I think it's the fundamentalist Christians, and by the way, also the fundamentalist Muslims, the fundamentalist Jews, it's those that believe that their religion cannot possibly be wrong. They are the ones with the closed minds, the ones that say, every single word that my preacher or my rabbi or my imam tells me is absolutely right, and I won't question, I won't challenge it. Those are the people that make me nervous. All right, so I don't mean to at all talk about the common Christian. And Catholics went for Gore in 2000 and went slightly for Bush in this election. And obviously there are many Protestants that voted for Kerry. So let me be clear. I don't mean – in fact, as far as I'm concerned, true Christianity means looking out for the poor. And that's what Jesus wanted. And so I don't really understand how this idea that Jesus wanted capital gains tax cuts ever got around. But you go on to point out, Nathan, that the body of a woman is rarely considered in the abortion debate. Many people see that simply as murder, that you simply shouldn't kill a life, and most of them believe life begins at conception. I agree with you, Nathan. I don't think people who are, quote, pro-life, unquote, do consider the body very much of a woman. And that's kind of the point of we pro-choice people, right? We think the woman's body should be considered since the pro-life people would basically force the woman to use her body in ways she doesn't want to use it. So, and I understand that. I understand that for the pro-lifers, the woman is irrelevant. She's just a vehicle. She's like in the Matrix when you have those baby maker machines. That's what the woman is for some pro-life people. And they consider it a life. And I guess my question, Nathan, that I still don't really understand is if a woman goes to a fertility clinic and she gets 100 eggs fertilized because she's having trouble, what happens to the other 99? Right now they're thrown away. I assume Christians want to forcibly take those things, or maybe Christian women want to, across the nation, offer up themselves to have the 99 twins of the one fertilized egg because it's life, right? Even if it's frozen. I don't know. I don't think it's been thought through very much. But my point is broader than that. I'm really not trying to change people's minds on pro-choice, pro-life right now. What I'm trying to do is trying to really understand the views and understand, at least make red state people understand how we blue state people put it. It's not that we love abortion. I assume there's some that do. It's not that blue staters love abortion. It's that they don't think it's their right to make other people's decisions for them. That's the heart of the matter. The same is true on gay people. You say, Nathan, that red state people don't want to control gay people. Most tolerate homosexuality, but can't get around to thinking that marriage is state-sanctioned as well as sanctioned by religion. It's not hate. Well, you know, to me, Nathan, it's the same thing, really, as what people said about black people. We don't have any problem with black people. We just don't want them coming to our movie theaters, to our restaurants. These are white movie theaters. These are white restaurants. They need to just stay in their place. It's not tolerating homosexuality, as you put it, to say that gay people have lesser rights than straight people, right? I mean, no gay person in America, you show me one, maybe there's one, I don't know of any self-respecting gay group in America that's actually trying to pass any law that would require a church to do anything for gay people. Gay people couldn't do it if they wanted to. Because we have a First Amendment. You can't use the government to force a church to marry anybody. In fact, one of the secrets I have, and I plan on telling some gay organizations about this, is that we supporters of gay rights need to go around with our own state-by-state campaign, and we need to have initiatives that say this. The state of X the state of Ohio shall not under any circumstance require any church in Ohio to sanction marriage between gay people. But notwithstanding that, but also gay people in Ohio should have equal rights under the law. Now, interestingly, that would overturn the current Ohio marriage statute. But people reading that, oh, okay, state shouldn't require a church to do anything. Well, I agree with that. And gay people should have equal rights. I agree with that. We might just overturn all of these anti-marriage amendment statutes by doing that, because I think people truly misunderstand. If you look at some of the blog entries I have on this very website, I have right-wingers who've written in and talk about the fact that gay people are trying to make their churches do something. But that's just not true. So, again, I do think that a lot of it is misinformation. I think a lot of it is lack of understanding. And a lot of it is the fact that blue staters don't want to control other people's lives, and red staters do. But again, if you disagree, call in toll-free 877-57-SCOOP. I want to go and I want to read for you some of the things that I've written on the website just to, well, to get across that this really isn't as much of a mandate as Bush is claiming it is. You're going to hear all these people in the right-wing talk shows say that Bush received more votes than any other president. Well, obviously the votes increase every year as more and more people are born in America. Of course, John Kerry received more votes than Ronald Reagan. Don't want to mention that around too many Republicans. They might get upset. But the main thing I think is interesting is that if you look at the margin, even the popular vote margin, the 3% margin between Bush and Kerry, I've gone back and looked back to 1824 when America first started recording its popular vote. It turns out that the margin between Bush and Kerry is the smallest popular vote margin for any re-elected president in American history. No president in American history has ever been reelected with a smaller margin than Bush beat Kerry. But they're going to go on, and of course, as I pointed out on yesterday's show, and if you want to follow along, you can listen to yesterday's show, but basically, 4 million people who voted for Gore stayed home this election, and I don't think they did it because they loved Bush or because they hated Kerry. They stayed home because their vote quite literally didn't count, due to the peculiarities of the Electoral College. Had we had in California and New York close Senate races, had we had ballot initiatives that were really controversial, like the ones in the red states that were anti-gay marriage, I think then blue state voters would have come out. They probably wouldn't have elected John Kerry, but they would have made a popular vote tie or maybe even a Kerry victory. The point of all this is that we have a system, an electoral college system that Republicans will never want to change, that is biased in favor of them. And it's just the way the system works. Small states have more power, and we have more small states out in the Rocky Mountains, in the South, small population states. Obviously, the states are larger in area. But those small population states get a bigger vote. And the Electoral College obviously helps the Republicans. So what do we do here? We still have a divided nation. George Bush didn't win hardly any more states than he won in 2000. He lost New Hampshire, which he won in 2000. And Iowa and New Mexico, which ever so slightly went for Gore in 2000, ever so slightly went for Bush in 2004. The difference is about 10,000-12,000 votes. It's a very small difference. We really are a divided nation. And I want to figure out how we talk to each other, even if we do talk to each other. You know, right-wingers will write on my website, but they won't call into my show. And I'm going to give you another chance, 877-57-SCOOP. And I think the reason is that while when we liberals call into right-wing talk shows, they won't let us talk. They'll hang up on us. But right-wingers, you know, bring it on. Bring it on, I say, because I think we have to understand each other. I also think there are a lot of moderate Republicans that may not realize that their party's been hijacked. There are certainly Republicans, the old-time Republicans, that just want tax cuts, they want strong defense. This is the thing that made the Republican Party. They're not so much about controlling other people's lives. And those people, I just got to say, you need to look at the new people being elected in the Republican Party. Let's just look at four senators that were first elected on Election Day. We've got Senator Bunning of Kentucky, who people, I think, rightly believe has mental health problems. He wouldn't show up at his debate. He read it from a teleprompter in the other room. He said that his opponent looked like one of the sons of Saddam Hussein, and he also implied that his opponent was gay. Then you have Mel Martinez in Florida attacking his Republican primary opponent for daring to support hate crimes laws, laws that want to punish severely people who beat up gay people. And he said that his opponent was a darling of the homosexual extremists because he wanted to punish people who beat up gay people. Think about that. It gets worse, though. You've got Jim DeMint of South Carolina, and he got elected saying that not only should gay people not be teachers in our schools, but single mothers shouldn't be teachers in our schools either. They simply should be prohibited from teaching. But frankly, I think at the end of the day, it is Oklahoma Senator Coburn, Tom Coburn, that takes the cake. Tom Coburn is a former abortion doctor. He's a former doctor who carried out abortions. And he believes, or he says he believes, in a death penalty for doctors who carry out abortions. Now, either he's got a profound failure to see irony, or he's got some real serious problems. He actually wants to kill doctors like himself that performed abortions. It's a very strange thing, and yet he won in very conservative Oklahoma. So this is your new Republican Party, and I think at the end of the day, the way for Democrats to succeed is for moderate Republicans to realize that they don't want to be hijacked by the religious right, that the Democrats, in fact, are the party of fiscal conservatism, that the Democrats, in fact, are the party of homeland security, that the Democrats, in fact, are the party that are more looking out for the threats that this nation faces, whether from Iran or North Korea, and not making up threats like Iraq. I think we can have the same Democrat-moderate coalition that overwhelmingly won in the Clinton years. But to do that, we have to let Republicans know who their allies are. We have to let them know who is in control of the Republican Party. Anyway, that's my view, but if you call in, you disagree, feel free. Toll-free number, 877-57-SCOOP. We appreciate your calls, and we'll be right back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
The wails of despair from progressive friends began pouring through my telephone very early on November 3rd. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? We'll have to move to Canada. I can't take another 4 years. It's so much to bear. I give up. Get a grip. Yes, the Bushites are back, and yes, it's going to be a miserable 4 years of grueling battles as they push their agenda of more war, more right-wing appointments to the courts, more giveaways to corporate power, more pollution, more cuts in public services, more assaults on Social Security, more secrecy, more shredding of our liberties, more, well, more Bush. But give up? Give up the fight for our essential American values, the values of fairness, justice, and opportunity for all? Surrender our nation's historic possibilities to these ideological zealots and corporate frontmen? Not a chance. What are we going to do? Fight back, that's what. First, recognize that we're fighting from strength and are tantalizingly close to winning. 49% of voters not only were with us in this election, but strongly with us, including more than 60% of young voters. Our grassroots organizing this time was stupendous, giving us new expertise, tools, and outreach to keep advancing. And you can count on the Bushites to give this year's non-voters and wary Bush voters more and more reasons to get active with us. Second, recognize that fighting for democracy is always a long-haul proposition. It took decades for America's founders to build enough public support to break with England. Likewise, the abolitionists, suffragists, populists, labor, civil rights, and other movements didn't achieve their historic successes on their first outing, and it'll require the same perseverance on our part. This is Jim Hightower saying, we've just begun to lift our country up. As Willie Nelson says, the early bird might get the worm, but it's the second mouse that gets the cheese.
The holiday taste of Sam's Club is here. Save time and money by shopping for all of your holiday business and home entertaining needs in one convenient stop. Visit the club this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, to sample a variety of delicious food perfect for any occasion. While you're there, you can pick up gifts for your employees, family, and friends. During this busy holiday season, don't miss your chance to shop, sample, and save on all of your business and home entertaining needs at the Holiday Taste of Sam's Club this weekend. Sam's Club, we're in business for small business.
Federal College loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, former congressional attorney, trying to understand this red state, blue state divide. And I think some of you really are trying to understand it as well. Sometimes it's just insults. It's just insults. And I think it's really useful for everyone to read some of the things that have been posted on the blog at www.radioinsidescoop.com, because a lot of people really aren't trying to understand each other, and maybe I'm not either. But here's a comment by Anonymous. And again, the very fact that someone writes an anonymous comment shows he doesn't want dialogue. He writes an email that is not working, Anonymous, because he doesn't want dialogue. He doesn't want people to talk with each other. He just wants to throw a flame and then run. And of course, Anonymous writes that the comment of the woman who wrote the letter to the Red States, "This comment makes me understand the sickness of the liberal addled mindset and what it means to be called lily-livered. This woman would sell her nation because she's afraid and wants to change institutions because of so-called equality of abnormality. On November 2nd, you learned that you are the minority. Live with it, because you are a coward. You cannot live." Now, what's the purpose of this? What's the purpose of this? Do red state voters really think blue state voters are going to cower in fear? I mean, yeah, some are talking about going to Canada, but I don't think many will do it. I don't think many people are going to run and hide in the United States of America. No, we are going to fight for our country. And all this does, I think, is it divides people even more. And here's a comment by Stephen Cormier. He writes, "You people are a sad lot. Wouldn't the world be a rosy place if we could all just get along? Have you been mollycoddled so much that you think that peace and love are the natural order and that comfort and security are your birthright? Instead of resenting those who are willing to fight for the comfort and security that has been provided to you, ingrates, how about a thank you if someone ever does nuke this country? Comfort and security is gained through strength and resolve, not whining and complaining." Well, you know, Stephen, I agree with you. I agree with you that that we have to use strength and resolve, but we also have to use wisdom. We also have to use wisdom. Maybe we should be fighting the terrorists where they live instead of where we create them. You know, it's interesting to me, the straw men that people, the right-wingers bring up, the red state voters, right? The straw man is that Democrats supposedly didn't want to fight Osama bin Laden. It's simply not true. Everybody did. 99% of us did. So the idea is, oh, we want to sit at home and wait to be attacked. No, we all agreed to attack where the terrorists are. We just don't want to attack where the terrorists aren't. And it's amazing to me, again, I think the woman from the New York City, she had it when she said, look, New Yorkers, they're the ones who have faced this, who have suffered, who are most concerned about terrorism for good reason. People in Washington, too, by the way, I should note, I was in a building just the side of the Capitol, and the Capitol was quite likely the target of the plane that went down in Pennsylvania. We are the ones who most risk dying from terrorism, and yet we are the ones who are most trying to protect the Constitution, to protect the Bill of Rights, to saying you don't just round up people, you have to give them a trial. And we're also the ones saying we need to fight this war intelligently. So it's not about do we fight the war on terrorism or not. And I don't know how we get beyond these simplistic notions that keep going around, but maybe you can help me. The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Caller, You're on the line with Mark Levine.
This is Ed from New York.
Hi, Ed.
I have a couple of thoughts here.
Yeah.
First of all, I think the people who put the messages on your blog are basically cowards. They're the ones who like to hit and run.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, they're like the gun-toter who wants to preserve their right to the machine gun and to all of those other things and then run away and not be counted and not show up, especially when you get something from somebody named Anonymous.
Right.
That's the first thought. The second thought that I have is that we as Democrats need to go forward and we need to round up our people who will be coming to us when, unfortunately, I'm afraid we're going to have a lot of loss of life in Fallujah.
Yeah.
And because of that, I'm afraid that as time will go on, we're going to build another anti-war movement just like we had with Vietnam.
Yeah, I'm afraid that's the case. I don't really see any possible exit strategy. And the worst part is that there really are dangers facing this nation in Iran, in North Korea, and we just don't have the troops.
We don't.
And the president says he doesn't want a draft. Okay, fine. Most people don't want a draft. How are we going to defend this nation? I don't have an answer. And one of the interesting things I've seen is the way that I think a lot of liberals and blue staters are taking comfort in each other. It's, well, and now President Bush will have to live with the consequences of his own policies, whether in Iraq or whether it's the deficit. You know, I'm reading that George Bush now wants to start this privatization of Social Security.
And there is something about that I wanted to comment about, Social Security.
Yeah, let me make my point, and then you can make your comment.
Okay.
My point is that I would say, if I were the Democrats, I would say, you know what? We support privatization of Social Security on three conditions. One, that you don't cut anybody's benefits. Two, that you don't raise anybody's taxes. And three, that you don't increase the deficit. And if you can do all that, George Bush, we support it. But let's put in the bill that if it starts to increase the deficit, or you cut someone's benefits, or you raise someone's taxes, then the bill is immediately of no effect. And then you force George Bush to live with the contradictions of his own policy, because you can't possibly do what he wants to do without raising taxes, cutting benefits, or adding to the national debt. But what's your point, Ed?
My point is, I think George Bush feels like he has a mandate to raise Social Security, and I think that's great for the Democrats. I'll tell you why, for two reasons. First of all, I think the only way he can do it with any sort of fiscal sanity is either to cut benefits or raise the age.
Right.
Either of those things will antagonize large groups of people. And the larger the group of people that are antagonized, the more voters we're going to get the next time around.
I'll tell you my concern, Ed, though. I actually don't think he's going to cut benefits or raise taxes. I think he's going to throw it all on the national debt. I think he's going to let the national debt balloon like no liberal has ever let it balloon. He's going to raise it to massive, massive debt that future generations will have to pay back, because that's the easy way. It's very easy to take the credit card out and spend something and then leave it to somebody else to pay the bill.
It's not so easy when the dollar is at an all-time low.
That's
against
true.
The euro.
That's true.
It's not so easy when you have even Republican senators saying we've got to do something with the national debt. I think, and here's where I disagree with you, Mark, I think, as I heard somebody say recently, George Bush never promised that he wouldn't raise the age or cut benefits on Social Security. And by cutting benefits, I suspect what he's going to do is cut the annual increase based on the cost of living. I think mark my words, he will antagonize older voters and he'll antagonize younger voters, and we don't need that much more. And that will give us a bunch more blue states when it comes to senatorial elections in 2 years from today.
Well, Ed, I hope you're right. You may be right. You make some very good points about how it's hard to increase the debt much further. My view is that Karl Rove knows that he can't do that, and so what he'll do, he'll just throw up huge, huge amounts of debt and leave it to the next president to pay off. But we'll see, and I want to thank you very much for your call. I want to read from some of the things in the blogs that you may not have heard if you just listen to the radio show and you don't take a look at the blog. There's a very funny concession speech. And again, I put up many things I thought were very interesting, some funny, some sad, some angry, up there on the website. And what's interesting to me, of course, it was the letter from New York to the red states, by far, that got the most response. But there's a concession speech that's delivered. It's a concession speech that we all wanted to hear, I guess blue state voters wanted to hear. And this concession speech points out that, well, let me read some of it to you. "I concede I misjudged the power of hate." That's pretty powerful stuff. I didn't see it. So let me take a moment to congratulate the president's strategists. Putting the gay marriage amendments on the ballot in various swing states like Ohio, well, that was genius. Genius. It got people, a certain kind of people, to the polls. There are some that would say I sound bitter, and now is the time for healing to bring the nation together. Let me tell you a little story. Last night I watched the returns come in with some friends here in Los Angeles. As the night progressed, people began to half-seriously talk about secession, a red state-blue state split. The reasoning was this: we in blue states produce the vast majority of the wealth in this country and pay the most taxes, and you in the red states receive the majority of the money from those taxes while complaining about them. We in the blue states are the only ones who've been attacked by foreign terrorists, yet you in the red states are gung-ho to fight a war in our name. We in the blue states produce the entertainment that you consume so greedily each day, while you in the red states show open disdain for us and our values. Blue states civilians are the actual victims and targets of the war on terror, while red state civilians are the ones standing behind us and yelling, "Oh yeah? Bring it on." More than 40% of you Bush voters still believe that Saddam Hussein had something to do with 9/11. I'm impressed by that. Truly, I am. Your sons and daughters who might die in this war know it's not true. The people in the urban centers where Al-Qaeda wants to attack know it's not true. But those of you who are at practically no risk believe this easy lie because you can. As part of my concession speech, let me say that I really envy that luxury. I concede that. Healing? We, the people at risk from terrorists, the people who subsidize you, the people who speak in glowing and respectful terms about the heartland of America while that heartland insults and excoriates us, we wanted some healing. We spoke loud and clear, and you refused to give it to us, largely because of your high moral values. You knew better. America doesn't need its allies, doesn't need to share the burden, doesn't need to unite the world, doesn't need to provide for its future. Hell no. Not when it's got a human shield of pointy-headed, atheistic, unconfrontational breadwinners who are willing to pay the bills and play nice in the vain hope of winning a vote that we never can. Because we are morally inferior, I suppose. We are supposed to respect your values while you insult ours. And the big joke is that for 20 years we've done just that. Pretty strong words. And I think what it's showing is that the anger in America is growing. And I don't know how we can stop it if we don't start talking to each other. And I want to conclude after the commercial break with some last words about the woman in deep despair, also on the website. If you want to call in, you have one last chance to do it. The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. We'll be right back with the final minutes of the Inside Scoop right after this.
Political party can do is to abandon its reason for existence and try to become a pale imitation of the other party. Yet this is exactly what some of the so-called political pros are prescribing for Democrats. The latest conventional wisdom from these insiders is that Bush's election is a triumph of moral values over such big issues as war and the economy. George W., they say, bluntly professes that he's guided by God, thus causing evangelical Christians to vote for him, even against their economic self-interest. Therefore, they assert, Democrats can't win until they get like George and start appealing to Christian fundamentalists. Nonsense! Certainly, the working people and poor folks who are in those churches must be appealed to by Democrats, but not like George, not on the narrow basis used by Republicans, God, guns, and gays. Rather, Democratic candidates must openly profess, by word and deed, the deeply held fundamental moral values that the party was created to represent: fairness, justice, and opportunity for all. This is high moral ground, which the Bushites routinely desecrate with virtually all of their policies and actions. Yet it's ground that Democrats senselessly have abandoned. It's not that evangelical working-class Christians voted against their own economic self-interest on November 2nd, but that the Kerry campaign had failed to appeal to it with any clarity or credibility. The candidate himself was aloof, elitist, and surrounded by upscale professionals, and the campaign gave little sense that a Kerry administration would be an FDR-JFK-LBJ champion of America's underdogs. This is Jim Hightower saying, yes, Democrats must talk more directly about values, the core Democratic values that make the party important. These are not only the values that founded America, but in church terms, they're the values preached and practiced by Jesus.
I have these nightmares. This taco, not just an ordinary taco, but this big evil taco is haunting me.
Guacamole.
You see, I was exposed to credit cards in college, and I wasn't the most responsible person back then.
Go, go, go!
I mean, I heard the words credit card and thought, hey, free money! Plane ticket to spring break? Credit card. New skis? Credit card. 135 taco dinners? Bam! Credit card. But hey, it's not too late to do something about your credit. Get ScorePower from Equifax.com. ScorePower gives you your credit report, credit score, and it puts you on the road toward the credit you deserve for just $14.95. So, check out Equifax.com today and get that taco you ate 7 years ago out of your life.
Get ScorePower at Equifax.com or 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Adios, taco.
Get the power. ScorePower at Equifax.com.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We just got a few minutes left. I don't know that we're getting anywhere in this red state, blue state divide. I've opened the lines, hopefully, for conservatives to call in. They're not calling in. They don't want to challenge me on the air. And I just have to say that, well, you know, I don't support the, and it's a strong word, but the bombing and then running. I just think that we have to talk with each other and stop insulting each other. And you know, some of you maybe think that I've been insulting. And let me say, my goal is not to be. I know that one of the persons who contributed mightily to the blog over the weekend, a person who calls himself Average Republican but doesn't leave his email address because he doesn't want dialogue, I guess, said that he felt that I was intolerant of religious people. Let me be clear here. I not only believe in tolerance for religion, I think that's exactly what our country stands for. In fact, it's liberals who say that whatever your religion, as long as you don't want to harm someone else, it should be tolerated. People should be allowed to pray what they want, where they want. Liberals, by the way, support the right of people to pray by themselves. What they don't support, though, is the right to coerce other people into prayer. There's a huge difference between praying by yourself in school and having the public school teacher join everyone in a prayer, because who's going to write the prayer? So let me be clear. Liberals have tolerance for everything except intolerance. And that may seem not fair, but actually it makes sense. I have heard so many people say, well, liberals don't tolerate Christians who simply want to, you know, give gay people less than equal rights. And the answer is, well, no, we can't, any more than we can tolerate slave owners who wanted slaves. It is not tolerant to tolerate intolerance. And I hope I've made that clear. We do not have to, in the name of tolerance, tolerate people. I don't have to tolerate the Ku Klux Klan because they disagree with me. I don't, because there's one thing for having views, and there's another thing for pushing those views down someone else's throat. And I should note that we have had strong Christian thinkers in the Democratic Party. Look at Jimmy Carter. I think America learned what a born-again Christian was for the first time. Those that weren't born again learned that term for the first time in 1976 when Democrat Jimmy Carter first became president. And I would hope that Republicans would give those who are not fundamentalists the same opportunity to have their views in America. Michael Kinsley, I think, put it best in Los Angeles Times. He said, you can't oppress us and simultaneously claim we are oppressing you. And that's what I see in all these Republican bloggers, right? That's what I see. Oh, my God, they control the White House. They control both houses of Congress. They control the Supreme Court. They control the right-wing media. They control everything. They control radio talk shows across the nation. And yet they're claiming about oppression. And I just don't understand. I mean, I don't understand how someone in control can keep complaining about oppression. And I ask you just once to open your eyes, to do what the prophets did in the Bible, and actually look out for those who are not in power. Actually look out for those who are struggling. And read for me, if you will, if you've been listening to this broadcast, whether live or archived, please go to the website, www.radioinsidescoop.com, and read the blog entry on deep despair. Because it describes a young woman, a young lesbian woman, crying. And this is a true story. It's by a woman named Pat Schneider. She said she saw this woman crying so hard that the author writes, "I could hardly understand her words." Quote, "I don't want to live in this country anymore. The worst thing is, for the first time in my life, I feel dirty. I want to die," unquote. Now, I would hope, and I don't believe, that any, well, I won't say any, hope, I know most Bush voters did not want this woman to feel like she wants to die. In fact, suicide among gay teens is way higher than among straight teens. And the woman asks Pat Schneider, the author, she's 70 years old, what could she say to this beautiful young woman? What can she say to her children? And I think she comes away with something. She reminds this young lesbian woman who's so in such despair, she reminds her of how it was, you know, during the Holocaust, and how it was back when the Huns were in sweeping down on Europe, and how Indian mothers felt when French and English armies came across America to destroy the Native Americans. And the answer is that we have undergone hard times, harder times in the past. Think of blacks in the civil rights movement. Think of slavery, not just in America, all over the world. And yet we have overcome. And we've overcome not always through electoral majorities. I mean, look at the fact that the South overwhelmingly voted for those Jim Crow laws, but through quiet, firm persuasion, through going out there, doing sit-ins, even civil disobedience, lunch counters, letting people know we exist, we have a right to live, stay out of our lives. And the woman finally came at the end of this, and I think it was a beautiful thing, at the end of this essay she wrote. She said, this is her answer to the young woman that's crying. "You tell that young woman that there are strangers who care. Tell her all across this land there are strangers who care." And I think that's our message, our blue stater message, if you will, to the American public. We are strangers who care. We will try to talk the language of values. We will try to talk the language of religion. We believe religion is about caring. But we will never give up on trying to protect people's civil rights, people's right to liberty, to be free from the government telling them how to live their private lives. The Pledge of Allegiance doesn't just have "under God" in it. It ends with liberty and justice for all.